True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Thursday, July 29th. Frank Stample joined by Chris Towers for a massive trade edition of the podcast. We'll get Chris's reactions to all of the trades. Your fantasy trade deadline is approaching. We have some last-second players for you to acquire, maybe some to sell as well. We know that Chris is the man behind the scene with the trade chart, so we'll get some thoughts there on moves that we should be making. We'll recap all of Wednesday's action and so much more. Chris, what's up, man? How you doing?
Good. A lot going on today. It was a busy, busy, busy baseball day. I mean, I hope Friday is more busy than tomorrow just because I'm off Friday, you know, selfishly.
Please don't say that, Chris.
Love a busy trade deadline. You know, it's much more fun.
100%. It's definitely fun. It's awesome for baseball. It could be awesome for fantasy depending on where your players land. And we'll talk about all that,
Yeah. Especially
some relievers here. That's going to change some things, but yeah, we'll be around Friday. Any big trades that happen the next couple of days, actually, we'll have some emergency podcasts for you. We currently have some up with myself and Scott's reactions to the Starling Marte trade, Joey Gallo, and Eduardo Escobar. But let's start with Starling Marte. He was traded away from your Miami Marlins, Chris, to the Oakland A's in exchange for Jesus Luzardo, which is just like it's a crazy trade. It's a really, really fun trade. Marte is having an awesome season. 3.7 fantasy points per game, tied for third among outfielders, 22nd best outfielder in Roto this season, despite missing 37 games with injury. Give me your reaction to all of it. What does this mean for Starling Marte's value? Jesus Luzardo, what do you think for his dynasty value? Where does he fit in with the Marlins? Everything.
So I'll start off with Marte. Downgrade. I think because the lineup and the park are better, it can be close to a wash, but you know, the Marlins are second in stolen bases this season. The Athletics are 16th. And that's a big part of why Starling Marte's been so good, is he's got those 22 stolen bases in like, what, 68 games or 63 games, something like that. And he's been on a 45 steal pace since getting traded to the Marlins last season. So this has been, you know, he hasn't run at that kind of pace basically since 2017. He was more like a 20 to 25 steal guy the last couple of years with the Pirates. So the Marlins really let him run. You know, obviously, I think he has 27 RBI, 52 runs scored. The run production numbers haven't been great. And that's what I think he benefits from in the move to Oakland, because now instead of hitting behind a pitcher and whoever the Marlins are throwing out at leadoff on that day, I think they have a 319 OBP from their leadoff men this season. He'll be hitting behind the number nine hitter, who's going to be bad, but you know, probably someone like Elvis Andrus, and then Mark Canna, who is really, really good and has a 379 OBP. I think he's been above 373 straight years. So Starling Marte is going to have a lot more run producing opportunities. And I mean, the runs, man, the Marlins have not scored many runs, but Adam Duvall and Jesus Aguilar have driven in all of them. And so Starling Marte has actually been on a really, really good run pace. I think he's on like 130 pace for the season.
Yeah, he's on a 51 steal pace this year as well. Like 22 steals in what he's done. Like the power is down, but batting average, steals, runs, that's exactly what you want Starling Marte for. The one thing I'll push back on there, Chris, is for Oakland, I hear you with the steal numbers, but isn't that kind of based on who your personnel is? Like they've let Canna run this year, which is pretty surprising. Ramon Laureano ran a lot early on in the season, which you were actually right about. The steals have completely slowed up for him. But I think they know what they're getting in Marte. Like maybe he doesn't run as much, but I still think he's going to run.
I think the biggest thing is that you go from the number nine hitters for the Marlins have averaged a 219 or 220 OPS for the season.
Yikes.
Pitchers, man. And the leadoff hitters, as I said earlier, were 319. For the A's, it's like 297, I think, for the number nine hitters and 360, 371 for the leadoff spot, obviously. Canna's been there primarily. I would expect he'll stay there and Marte will hit second. So it's not just that the A's are, I think, philosophically more opposed to running than the Marlins are, but I think it's also just that he's going to have fewer opportunities because he's going to have guys on base ahead of him a lot more often. You know, you think about maybe anywhere from 10 to 15% more often, which isn't nothing, but when you're talking about a category like stolen, which isn't a ton, but when you're talking about a category like stolen bases, which are inherently scarce and inherently rare, you know, there's a possibility that he just goes through a weird stretch where he just gets on base and there's someone on ahead of him every time and he won't have an opportunity to get a steal. So I think overall it's a little bit of a downgrade. I'm not saying I'm moving Marte down in my rankings, but you know, I think his value is lower today than it was with the Marlins.
All right. In 1 minute or less, give me your grand scheme thoughts on Jesus Luzardo from Dynasty, what it means for the Marlins. I mean, he's having an awful season. Do you think he bounces back?
Even in AAA, and generally speaking, when a top prospect struggles like this and gets traded, you figure the team that's trading them knows something that the acquiring team doesn't, or you know, something like that. But in this instance, the Marlins have been so good at getting not just the guys that they draft and develop and sign, but also the guys that they've traded for. Sandy Alcantara was one of them. Sixto Sanchez was another. They've done a really good job of developing guys. So you look at the raw tools that Luzardo has. He's, you know, got good size for a lefty. He can throw. I mean, his fastball averaged 96 miles an hour this season. So there's definitely skill there. He was arguably the top pitching prospect in baseball heading into last season. So I think you look at it all with the situation that the Marlins have, good ballpark. I think you probably want to buy low on him in Dynasty if you get the opportunity. And if he gets called back up or if he, you know, reports straight to the Marlins, I'm going to add him in some of my deeper leagues and just see if they can figure something out. You know, the Marlins, I think, have earned that at this point with their pitching.
Yeah, Jesus Luzardo is currently 32% rostered on CBS. And the last update we saw is that the Marlins have not decided if Luzardo will immediately join the rotation. So at least it's something that they are considering. It's in the back of their minds. By the way, if you're a Marlins fan, the future of this pitching staff, and I know like it doesn't always work out. The Mets had all these young starting pitchers, but yada, yada. I mean,
it's pitching.
But Sandy Alcantara, Trevor Rogers, Pablo Lopez, Sixto Sanchez, Jesus Luzardo, Edward Cabrera.
Wow. Max Meyer's better than Edward Cabrera.
He's
ranked higher in all prospect lists. So, and he's a double A.
That's
Edward Cabrera's a triple A now. So, I mean, they're going to trade one of those guys. I'm fairly certain of it. They need about seven bats.
Yes. And they did it last year. They traded, or two years ago, they traded Zach Gallen straight up for Jazz Chisholm. So maybe they look to do something like that as well. Let's move into Joey Gallo right here, baby. The Bronx Bombers. And before we do that,
oh, you always want to talk about your favorite team.
I know. This is his official entrance music to New York.
You're falling.
Yes.
The Yankees down the
stand. All the good times, you're still a bargain.
Joey Gallo, man. Look, it's a match made in heaven. I don't know what else you need to add. I saw via, who was it? Roto_Nino on Twitter. He had like the Statcast numbers for what would Joey Gallo's home runs be if he played in Yankee Stadium, and it would be 29 instead of 25. So not a huge number, but short portion right field. The full trade, by the way, Joey Gallo and reliever Yoelly Rodriguez for four prospects from the Yankees. pitcher Glenn Otto, second baseman Ezekiel Duran, shortstop Josh Smith, and second base slash outfielder Trevor Hover. Gallo, how much are you moving him up, Scott? Chris?
I don't think you, like, the thing about Gallo and Marte is, like, even though I do think this is better for Gallo, even though I do think Marte loses value, I don't really think they're the kind of guys that you move up or down because of a trade, really. Like, they're so set, and so much of their value comes from what they actually do as opposed to the context that they're in, that, like, okay, maybe Gallo hits an extra home run or two, maybe Marte steals, you know, one or two or three fewer bases. Like, I think it is worse for Marte and better for Gallo, but I'm not really looking at it as like a, oh, wow, I need to adjust my rankings.
That makes sense. Yeah. I mean, look, Joey Gallo's power plays anywhere. He's one of those guys where sure, it'll help a little bit that he's in Yankee Stadium, but it's not like he wasn't hitting home runs in Texas because of the ballpark or anything. I do think it's a slight boost up for other Yankees hitters. It's going to be more run scoring opportunities for DJ LeMahieu, some more RBIs for Aaron Judge and for Giancarlo Stanton.
And, you know, we're going to have that conversation later about guys to buy. And I almost went with DJ LeMahieu as one of mine. Like, I know he's been awful. I know he's been arguably like not really worth, definitely not worth starting for large stretches of the year, but also not necessarily even worth rostering in some situations, but he's going to be better than this. Like, he's going to hit 300 the rest of the way, I would bet. And the lineup's so good. Like, if you get an opportunity to get DJ LeMahieu, I think you should do it.
And DJ LeMahieu, look, the numbers are not what we wanted them to be. He's been an underachiever. There's no doubt about that. He's been better, and he has an on-base streak, which is currently at 37 games. So, for whatever that's worth, for DJ LeMahieu. One of the prospects to pay attention to might have some value this year. Pitcher Glenn Otto, between AA and AAA this season, 3.33 ERA, 1.02 whip, 115 strikeouts in 75 and two-thirds innings pitched. The next trade that we have here, Eduardo Escobar went to the Milwaukee Brewers in exchange for infielder Alberto Ciprian, who is an 18-year-old prospect, and outfielder Cooper Hummel, who is a 26-year-old outfielder with high OBP. It's not Miller Park anymore. I think it's American Family Field. Plays very well for left-handed power. Escobar is a switch hitter. I actually think this one is a slight boost up for his fantasy value.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we've seen him. He's been fine this season. You know, that 778 OPS. Has he been really good lately?
He has bounced back.
Yeah, he's had a good July.
He's had a good July. Yep.
I think he's going to be, you know, right around an 800s, low 800s. OPS bat, but it wouldn't surprise me to see him go on a stretch, you know, like his 2019 season where he drove in a ton of runs. As you know, an emailer pointed out to us, I'm sorry I don't have the name, but they pointed out that the Brewers, I think, have been third in the majors in runs scored over the last 28 days or something like that. That lineup's been actually pretty good since Willy Adames got there. It would be even better if Christian Yelich were hitting, but he's still getting on base at least. So I think it's a good situation. I think it's definitely arrow up for Eduardo Escobar.
Escobar has 65 RBI this season playing for the Diamondbacks. Just think about that. 22 home runs, 246 batting average. Batting average is never going to be great. Maybe it ticks up a little bit here, 250, 260 for him, but power has been very good. RBI opportunities will be plentiful with the Milwaukee Brewers. Yeah. A few reliever trades. The Astros acquired Yimi Garcia from the Marlins in exchange for outfielder Brian De La Cruz and pitcher Austin Pruitt. Chris, who do you think? Well, I guess you could drop Yimi Garcia. He's not going to close, obviously, with the Houston Astros. Who do you think closes for the Miami Marlins? I think it's between Dylan Floro and Anthony Bender.
Yeah, I think Anthony Bender would be my pick. But Floro is the one who I don't think either one of them really has much closing experience. I guess Floro has more experience overall, so maybe they tend to go there. But I do think Anthony Bender is the better pitcher. So absent, you know, knowledge of what they're likely to do, I think Bender would be the one to pick up.
Yeah, and Anthony Bender is 10% rostered. Much better underlying numbers than Dylan Floro this season. Floro has fine numbers, but I do think Bender is better. And if you're just looking for a reliever to add for saves, I still do think Paul Sewald is one of the most under-rostered pitchers on CBS right now. Only 30% rostered. The Mariners traded away Kendall Graveman on Tuesday, And unless they make another move for a reliever, I think it's going to be Paul Sewald. Last trade here, Michael Givens was traded from the Rockies to the Reds in exchange for right-handers Case Williams and Noah Davis. Not really much fantasy value to talk about there, unless Givens works his way into save opportunities, which I guess you can't rule out given Cincinnati's bullpen this season. All right, let's talk about some stuff that actually happened in the games on Wednesday.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Oh my goodness gracious. Before I actually give you my pick is Tyler McGill. Joey Votto.
That was going to be my pick.
I started the podcast yesterday with Joey Votto, Chris, and like, even ahead of, oh my goodness gracious, like what he's doing right now.
Yeah.
He hit two more home runs on Wednesday. Another double dong. That's back-to-back multi-home run games for Joey Votto. He now has 7 homers over 5 games, 19 home runs on the season. I'll let you expand on it. We've talked a lot about him recently. And I told Scott yesterday, I moved him inside my top 12 first baseman, which maybe it's a little bit of an overreaction, but he kind of just looks like he's back.
Yeah, I mean, and if you had told me Joey Votto was going to reinvent himself late in his career and, you know, either sacrifice some power or sacrifice some contact rate to become more of a power hitter as he aged, that would have been what I would have bet on. And I would have bet on him doing it successfully because he's such a talented hitter and such a cerebral player. And we saw it at the end of last season. I was a little bit skeptical coming in. I certainly didn't have him ranked as highly as he's played, but you know, before did he have COVID right before the season?
I don't recall that happening. I know
he definitely had COVID at some point. There was something where he wasn't there. There were some concerns about whether he'd be ready for the season. I kind of like took him out of my top 200 and just stopped thinking about him really.
Yeah, he did.
But like,
he returned to the team on March 21st.
Yeah, but he's on a 35 homer pace. He's been really, really good this season. And the underlying numbers, you know, obviously this hot stretch has really helped the overall numbers. But you remember early in the season, we were talking about the overall numbers were really, the underlying numbers were so much better than the overall numbers that, you know, it was kind of like I was trying to figure out what was the reason why he wouldn't be living up to it. And I said, well, he's lost a lot of speed. He's never been a super fast guy, but he's down to 16th percentile in sprint speed. Maybe he's a little more shiftable, and maybe he just wasn't going to hit those expected numbers. He's right at them now, which gives me, you know, actually he's a little still below them. 379 WOBA coming into today, 394 X WOBA. The fact that those match up now, I think that's reason enough to buy in.
79% rostered is Joey Votto. We've talked about him a ton recently, so I don't really think there's much else to add, but the guy is just on fire. So love to see it. Hall of Fame push. Let's go. Joey Votto. I want to talk about Tyler McGill, who was up against the Braves on Wednesday. 5 1/3, 5 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts, 14 swinging strikes on 94 pitches for McGill. He's made 7 starts now with the Mets. 2.04 ERA, 1.10 whip, 3.89 xFIP. Okay, he's been lucky so far in some areas. His strand rate is very high. I think it's over 90%, and he's had some home run luck. 2.17 expected ERA, so he's really limiting hard contact. Roster rate is up to 76%. I feel a little bit more confident in him than I guess we've given him credit for to this point. So I don't know if he's just going to remain in the Mets rotation the rest of the season, but he's a big pitcher. He's 6'5", 6'6". He has 3 pitches.
6'7".
6'7". Yeah, he has 3 pitches that work next week in line for 2 starts at Miami, at Philadelphia. I like what I'm seeing from Tyler McGill. I'm buying in, Chris.
I mean, if you look at the StatCast stats, he looks like an ace through his 7 starts. It's a small sample size, but 258 expected WOBA on contact, that is 100 points lower than the league average. We talked about, you know, we talk about Kyle Hendricks being kind of the king of that. Well, Kyle Hendricks is usually in the 330 range. Tyler McGill's not going to keep this up. This is an absurd level of quality of contact suppression. But the fact that he's showing that skill is a very good sign, especially because he's combining it with good enough control and a pretty good strikeout rate. I don't know how super sustainable this is, but based on what he's done so far and the skills he's showed, I can't make a reasonable argument against him being rostered in every league.
Yeah, and if you look at his numbers at every level in the minors, they've been fantastic at every at every stage. I mean, over 10K per nine at every single level. There were a few stops here, small sample sizes. He had an ERA over four at high A in 2019, some other stuff here. But like, if you look at the FIP, the XFIP, and the WHIP for him, basically at every level, and the swinging strike rate for Tyler McGill, like, it all adds up. So I'm pretty intrigued. Roster rate's climbing up there. He's 76%, but two starts next week. I think you could just keep him in your lineup at the Marlins and at the Philadelphia Phillies. How about an oh my goodness gracious game? The Twins and Tigers combined for 31 runs on Wednesday. The Twins hit seven home runs in this game, which included two from Miguel Sano, two from Ryan Jeffers, and then one from each of Max Kepler, Brent Rooker, and Jorge Polanco. No home runs by the Tigers. They still won.
Yeah, that's honestly more impressive. The Tigers scored 17 runs without hitting a home run.
Yeah, I think there was some kind of record. I think it was the first time a team has been out-homered by seven and still won the game. So it's
they only had they only had seven extra base hits.
Yeah.
The Twins had seven home runs. Well, the Twins also only had eight extra base hits, but you know, seven of them were twice as good as the Tigers ones. So that's just a wild game.
Yeah, it really is. I don't know, honestly, if there's much to take away from it. Max Kepler has been really good in the month of July. Brent Rooker, someone Scott and I spoke about yesterday, he has power, has shown that in the minor league level. So in deeper leagues, 15-team roto, if you need power, I think he's a name that you could look at there. For the Tigers, each of Akil Baddoo, Derek Hill, Jamer Candelario, Willie Castro, Harold Castro, and Grayson Griner had multiple hits. Akil Baddoo, we know, is very good. Jamer Candelario, he's fine. He's a corner infielder in deeper roto leagues if you need one. Not really intrigued by anyone else there. Who started this game? Willie Peralta. That experiment.
Yeah, that's the takeaway here.
That experiment is over. 11 earned runs over his last two starts. And Jay Happ on the other side. His ERA is now up to 6.77. Bring us Joe Ryan. I want to see what the prospect could do. I think we're getting closer there. Once we get into August, Twins not playing for much. I think they want to get a look at some of these young kids.
One thing I will say, it's a very small sample size. He's only played 55 games this season, and his overall sample size is pretty mediocre. But Derek Hill in 2019 hit a career-high 14 home runs. He had only hit nine in his career before that. That was a double A. He's always had speed, and this season, between the majors and the minors, he's got 10 stolen bases in 55 games. He's hitting probably like high 280, 290 range. A lot of that's, you know, what he did in the minors. He's walking a lot. In an AL only league, for sure, he's you know what he's doing right now: 6 stolen bases in 18 games. Actually probably has a 300 batting average now after today. Someone to keep an eye on for deeper leagues because of the speed.
Again, the name there, Derek Hill from the Detroit Tigers, has started five of the last six games for them as well. The MLB trade deadline is approaching, so let nothing personal with David Sampson be your guide. David Sampson ran a Major League Baseball team for 18 years, so he's no stranger to how trades go down, why trades get accepted, or why offers get a hard no. Nothing personal will have more than just winners and losers. David will provide expert insight and analysis on every trade, no matter what goes down at the deadline. Remember, it's just business. It's nothing personal. And I'm especially interested to hear what David has to say regarding these Marlins trades, because they've been very interesting for them. News and notes from Wednesday. The Nationals and Phillies game was postponed due to 12 positive COVID tests for the Nationals. We know that Trey Turner tested positive on Tuesday.
Four players, I believe.
Yes, four players and eight staff members. Trey Turner, someone who left Tuesday's game because he tested positive. So I would imagine, like, if you play in a league where you could set your lineup for Friday through Sunday, which is a lot of NFBC leagues and some of the Tout Wars leagues, I don't know if the Nationals are just going to have enough players from their taxi squad. I mean, the Yankees figured it out, so I guess the Nationals could too, but
they are playing a doubleheader tomorrow.
All right. So,
and I believe Turner is, I believe that it's been reported that he is vaccinated.
Yeah. I mean,
So apparently, I know, you know, breakthrough cases happen. Yeah. I believe the protocols say that you can come back with a negative test or maybe two negative tests. Whereas, you know, you see Aaron Judge and how long he's been out. It seems like he's not vaccinated. That hasn't been confirmed. He refused to say, but you know, I think you can read between the lines there with how long he's been out. So, you know, it's possible Trey Turner isn't gone for a super long time.
Jared Walsh was placed on the IL with a right intercostal strain. He's missed the past couple of days for the Angels, and this is kind of just in conjunction with the numbers the past month or so have been taking a step back for Jared Walsh. We had a bunch of players leave their games with respective injuries on Wednesday. Rafael Devers left and was seen rubbing his hamstring. Eloy Jimenez, come on. Come on, man. Seriously, right groin strain for Eloy Jimenez, who hit just a mammoth home run on Tuesday. He was DHing in this game. So I thought, all right, maybe if he's playing the outfield, that's why it happened. He was just DHing.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it's nothing serious, but Eloy does have a pretty sizable injury track record so far. You remember his rookie season, he missed some time. He's a really big dude, you know?
Yep, sure is. So. Lourdes Gurriel exited after a hit by pitch on his elbow. Buster Posey was removed after taking a foul ball off the mask. Nolan Arenado was removed from Wednesday's action after getting hit by a pitch on his forearm. Nico Hoerner left the game with side soreness with the Chicago Cubs. We had a Dodgers news dump. Clayton Kershaw will continue rehab on Sunday. Mookie Betts is expected back on Sunday. Corey Seager, all right, finally, he is targeting a return sometime this weekend. Happy to get him back. Brandon Crawford expected back on Thursday. Luis Severino will throw a simulated game on Thursday. If all goes well, his next move could be a rehab start. Good news there for Luis Severino. Nelson Cruz was scratched Wednesday due to a foot contusion, but he did pinch hit, I believe it was in the eighth or ninth inning while I was watching the game. Mitch Garver was held out after getting hit by a pitch in his hand. That happened on Tuesday. Luis Robert moved his rehab to AAA on Tuesday, so he is inching closer to a return for the White Sox. I'm
going to say he's here next week.
Yeah, I think that would
not
make sense.
Not like in mine or your apartment, or necessarily even New York, but in the majors.
Are they playing the Yankees next week? No, I have no idea. Chris Archer fired 3 2/3 scoreless innings at AAA on Tuesday. He allowed a hit, a walk, and he recorded 4 strikeouts. He's 17% rostered. I don't know, Chris. Archer has been around for a long time. Anywhere you would be interested?
A long time since he's been good.
Anywhere you would be interested in?
Is he coming back from thoracic outlet?
It's something major like that.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way you can expect much from Chris Archer. You've got to see it before viewing him as anything more than an AL-only type of guy.
Yeah, he had thoracic.
And that is an injury that, as I'm sure you guys talked about with Steven Strasburg news yesterday.
Yep.
That is an injury that, I mean, it's not the worst injury that a pitcher can have,
it's pretty bad.
It's generally, if not a career ender, the start of the end of careers for most pitchers who have it. So it's just not a great sign. And also, he hasn't had an ERA below 4 since 2015.
Last news item here. Rodolfo Castro, who started at second base for the Pittsburgh Pirates on Wednesday, hit a double dong. And per ESPN stats and info, Rodolfo Castro is the first player in the modern era since 1900 to have each of his first 5 career hits go for a home run. One of them, by the way, was off of Josh Hader. So pretty damn impressive. He's 1% rostered. He was batting .300 at AA this season with 11 homers and 6 steals. I don't see him on any prospect lists anywhere. There's people that are talking about him, though, and people that are excited about Rodolfo Castro. Do you have anything?
One thing to add.
Sure.
You know, since the modern era, since 1900, there was a guy in the 1900/19-teens whose nickname was Home Run Baker because of how many home runs he hit. He hit 12 for his career high. So I'm going to go ahead and guess there was nobody before 1900 whose first 5 hits were home runs either. Just putting that out there.
Definitely.
I'm not a statistician.
Definitely makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know. Anything like this will make you take notice. I think if you change the parameters to five home runs in his first 23 plate appearances, the list probably expands, which tells you that, you know, one, Rodolfo's had some bad BABIP luck. But two, also, you know, five home runs for your first five hits sounds a little more impressive than, you know, five home runs in 23 or 24 plate appearances, but still impressive. He was hitting really well at AAA. Obviously, you know, a lot of people are hitting at AAA, but it's not the PCL or double, excuse me. Yeah. Look, this is the kind of thing that you should take note of. You shouldn't expect it to continue. We've seen, God, Matt Davidson, like 4 or 5 years ago, had a huge first week, didn't turn into anything. We've seen that kind of, I'm sure there are better recent examples, but the first two that came to mind were Matt Davidson and Chris Shelton. So, ooh,
throwbacks.
Matt Davidson was definitely the more timely one. but yeah, like it's impressive enough that you should, you know, in a 15 team league, if you need some help, sure, look his way.
Yeah.
Like I keep looking at, like, I keep thinking about Ryan McMahon and just how awful he's been for, I mean, really like the last month, but really he's been kind of not useful for like 3 months now. I'm not necessarily saying I would drop Ryan McMahon for him, but if I was in a spot where I was still relying on Ryan McMahon, sure, take a flyer. See if Rodolfo Castro can turn into something.
Rodolfo Castro, add him in NL only, maybe in some of your 15-team leagues. He's very impressive. And you know who else is impressive? Express. Express Confidence, Express You. Express is all new and all about you with a fresh mix of casual, versatile, and super comfortable styles. Got to start with their cotton stretch shirts, which are breathable, stretch-infused cotton for all-day comfort. My first priority is always comfort. And if I'm not comfortable, I'm not confident. By the way, I feel very comfortable right now. You know why? This V-neck right here? That's right.
Looks nice.
You guessed it. It's Express. These are also machine washable, so you don't have to worry about dry cleaning, and are available in all different kinds of solid colors. Maybe you need to dress up for a special occasion this summer, a wedding, graduation. Graduations are probably over, but you know, something like that. Whatever it might be. Express offers suiting and separates designed to be worn together as a suit or separately with casual pieces. I bought one of their slim-fitting olive blazers from the Luxe Comfort collection, and it really is the perfect combination of style and comfort. Available in chambray, linen, seersucker, and the aforementioned Luxe Comfort knit. Make sure to be on the lookout for great summer deals in stores and at express.com. Express Confidence, Express You. Let's check in on some meh starting pitchers who were going on Wednesday. Blake Snell up against the Oakland A's, 4 innings, 7 hits, 4 walks, 4 earned runs. He has gone just 6+ innings in 3 of 19 starts this season. And since 2019, following his Cy Young season in 2018, Blake Snell has pitched 241 and a third innings. He has a 4.48 ERA and a 1.35 whip. And we've brought this up all season, Chris, and the reason why I continue to do so is because he's 93% rostered, and he still started in 60% of CBS leagues. I don't know what else we need to see. I've dropped him, I believe, outside my top 60 starting pitchers. This guy should not be started on your fantasy team. 2 starts, it doesn't matter. Like, good matchup. I need to see 2-3 starts in a row to earn trust to get Blake Snell back in my lineup. Frankly, Chris, I am surprised that his roster rate and start percentage are still that high.
I guess I'm not, just because it's really hard to drop Blake Snell. Like,
you don't have to start him.
I understand it. He shouldn't be started right now. No.
I would drop him for Patrick Sandoval, by the way.
I think Patrick Sandoval is going to be better the rest of the season. I had Blake Snell at 54 the last time I updated my rankings, which is about a week plus ago. So yeah, there's just nothing about what he's doing right now this season. You know, he's getting a lot of strikeouts, but even that is, you know, he's got a 29% strikeout rate, which is pretty freaking good for most pitchers, but it's actually his lowest since 2017. He's got a 14% walk rate, which is bad for anybody. And he's getting hit really hard. You know, it's not like there's a lot of bad luck at play. If anything, he might be a little lucky that he only has a 5.44 ERA, because he was overperforming his expected ERA by 0.4 runs coming into today's start. He's getting hit hard. He's got bad control. He's not getting an elite number of strikeouts. Yeah, there's nothing good about it. I one thing I will point out is, you said, you know, since 2018 or since the start of the 2019 season, he has that 4.48 ERA or whatever the exact number was. I'll just quibble with it because 2019, he was actually really, really good. He had a 3.06x ERA, 3.32 FIP. Last season, the xERA and FIP weren't quite as good, but the xFIP was very good. He was awesome in that playoff run. There is something wrong with Blake Snell now. There's something that's gone wrong with Blake Snell since last season to this season. And I wonder if it's, you know, the elbow issues that he's had over the past couple of seasons. There was a shoulder thing as well at one point, I believe.
Yep.
And so, you know, there was a piece, I can't remember who wrote it. I think it was on Pitcher List about a month ago, talking about how his arm slot's lower and how that's affected the movement of his breaking balls and how it's made his fastball less effective. And that's the kind of thing that, like, if he is fighting through something, you know, that might be an explanation. He's still getting the velocity, but if he has to change his mechanics to get that velocity and he's not throwing with as much control, and that was never a strong suit for Blake Snell, it's really hard to find a reason to be optimistic.
Get him out.
Yeah.
Get him out of those lineups, Blake Snell. I want to see that start percentage down below 20% by next week. You could, I guess in NL only, you don't really have a choice, but I don't even know if that makes up 20% of our CBS leagues. Probably not. Zach Plesac up against the Cardinals. 5 innings, 7 hits, 2 runs, 4 strikeouts. Another just meh performance from Zach Plesac. And we did have a request on Twitter to try and figure out who Zach Plesac is this season. And your guess is as good as mine.
I've got Zach Plesac is 246 and a third innings into his major league career. He has a well below average strikeout rate. He's got pretty good control. 2.2 walks per nine is pretty good. It's not quite elite, but it's, you know, well above average. 1.5 home runs per nine, a 4.55 FIP, and a 3.62 ERA. If you put all of those things, and he has his ERAs over the course of his career, and the two biggest sample sizes now are 3.81 and like 4.20 after tonight's start. Then he has the 2.28 ERA in 55 and a third innings in 2020. I think with nearly every pitcher, we would look at all that and say he's kind of just a guy. I don't understand why we wouldn't say it with him. I know he was awesome last year, but like, mediocre pitchers have 8 start stretches where they're awesome all the time.
Yep.
So I look at it all and say, like, the margin for error is so slim for someone who gets hit as hard as he does, that if he's not just absolutely on the top of his game, things can go ugly really quickly. And I think it's asking too much for him to be on top of his game all the time. I think he can be a useful fantasy pitcher, but, you know, the dreams of him being the next Shane Bieber, which I think was kind of what people were hoping after last season, was, you know, another huge success for the Indians. He's not the next Kyle Hendricks either.
No, he's not.
I think he's fine to have around, but I have trouble seeing an argument for him over even someone that we've been really uninterested in this season, like Adam Wainwright.
Let's quickly run through some of these other meh starting pitchers. Yusei Kikuchi, he's not really meh, but he's kind of been meh recently. And up against the Astros, 5 innings, 4 runs, 3 of those were earned, 7 strikeouts, 16 swinging strikes on 101 pitches against one of the lowest swinging strike rate teams in baseball in the Houston Astros. What stood out to me here is spin rates down over 140 RPM on each of the fastball, cutter, slider. That's been an issue for Kikuchi, a little bit up and down here. He's been rocky, but overall, I look at everything between the swinging strike rate. He gets ground balls a good amount. I still trust Kikuchi. That's basically where I'm at.
Yeah, one thing I'm looking for in this one was the changeup usage, because that was way up in his last start. Yeah, he didn't use it that much today, but 14 times. You know, he's a legit 4-pitch pitcher. I, like you, I have faith. I just, everything that's gone wrong for him basically comes down to the 24% home run to fly ball rate. And that's just really hard to sustain.
It's been much worse recently too. So I think that's why you see the last five or six starts. It looks a little bit rocky for him.
But the strikeouts have been pretty good all year. The control has been pretty good. Like, he's doing everything you want except getting crushed. And I believe he will, you know, we're going to do that buy and sell thing. He was actually a pitcher I think you should buy.
Yes. Yes. I was just going to say, you know, I don't have my players picked out for that because got a little bit behind here with Joey Gallo trade. So
there's a lot going on.
It's
going
to be all you, Chris, but Kikuchi. Yes. Pitcher to buy. If anyone is concerned about him, he's someone I would be excited to have on my fantasy team for the final 2 months. Last two mad pitchers here, Tony Disco, Anthony DeSclafani. He's not mad. Overall numbers are still very good, but he is bad against the Dodgers. Oh my. Five starts this season against the Dodgers. I guess that means he's not going to have to face them again. Please, no more. 22 earned runs in 21 innings pitched. That is a 9.43 ERA. DeSclafani, we have found your kryptonite. And Kwang Hyun Kim, he reeled us in. We were buying in. Quality starts left and right. Boom. We get hit with regression. He was at the Cardinals on Wednesday. 2 2/3, 5 hits, 5 earned runs.
Not at the Cardinals.
He was at Cleveland. That would make a little bit more sense. But again, more often than not, that's why we cite the underlying numbers. Yeah. Of course, Kwang Hyun Kim was going through a great stretch, but the underlying numbers... He doesn't get a lot of swings and misses. He allows a lot of fly balls. Everything said that he was going to regress, and then we get a start like this. I still think he's fine. You can use him in the right spots, but this was a pretty obvious regression.
Just game. To go back to DeSclafani, he's only given up 42 runs this season. So that means that he's made five starts against the Dodgers out of 21, and half of his runs allowed have come against the Dodgers. He has a 1.89 ERA. Against everyone else. You look at the underlying numbers, 3.60 FIP, you know, that's still pretty good. I think he's going to be useful moving forward, but yeah, no, if the Dodgers are on the schedule, I would not want him in my lineup.
Don't do it anymore. One more thing to promote here. This is the final week. We are finalists for the sports category of the People's Choice Podcast Awards. We appreciate all that you do for us, and we hope that you enjoy our show enough to nominate us to advance to the final round to nominate Fantasy Baseball Today. Go to podcastawards.com/app/signup. And then toggle down the sports category. We've included the link at the top of the episode description as well. We are going to take a quick break. When we return, Chris is going to tell you which players you should be buying and selling heading into the second half. Well, final 2 months. We'll do that next here. Fantasy Baseball Today.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
All right, Chris, we're going to start with players to buy. Who's a hitter that you're looking at for this stretch run?
I already gave my pitcher, so we'll go with the hitter. You're only going to get three names in this segment unless we want to say you say Kikuchi again. But the hitter I'm going to buy is Whit Merrifield. He's hitting like .226 in the month of July. He's hitting .272 over the course of the season as a whole. Seems, if not likely to get traded, it certainly seems like a strong possibility that he will be traded. And I just think he's going to hit .300 the rest of the way. I have so much confidence in his skill set. I have so much confidence in his track record, the ability to put the bat on the ball, that, you know, wherever he lands, if he stays in Kansas City, if he goes somewhere else, I think he's going to have a very good finish to the season. Is he still leading the league in steals?
Yes. Whit Merrifield.
So, you know, it might cost a lot to get him, as it should, but if someone is frustrated by Merrifield's performance recently, he is absolutely a hitter I'm looking to buy.
I have two buy high players that I've talked a lot about, and
sure,
Pete Alonso in particular. If someone is just not valuing him to the level that they should, I just think he's going to have a monster final 2 months of the season. I mean, he's had a monster July, so it's going to be a little bit harder now. And I gave you his name a while back, but Pete Alonso is definitely someone I'm still buying in on. And Sean Manaea, two buy highs here. And I've been very excited about Manaea. Seems like all season I've just been a little bit higher on him than you guys in the rankings. And his last two starts, he has 22 strikeouts during that stretch. And on Wednesday, 6 shutout, 9 strikeouts against the Padres, 15 swinging strikes in that start. The ERA is down to 3.01, career high swinging strike rate for Sean Manaea. I just think there are people out there who maybe, like Yusei Kikuchi, they're just not buying into the level that they should. And even his teammate, Chris Bassett, is another pitcher like that, where we just look at him and we're like, all right, yeah, like he's good. But I have both of these guys ranked inside my top 40 starting pitchers, and you can argue maybe they should be even a little bit higher there. So Manaea and Pete Alonso for me. Players to sell, Chris. Who you got? One hitter and one pitcher.
The thing I'll add on Manaea is he's now averaged 92.9 miles per hour or better with his fastball in 3 of his last 4 starts. He was up to 93.2 miles per hour. I think that might actually be the highest of the season for him with that sinker. So that that's his highest since 2017. Manaea has always been a guy who will go through these stretches. He reminds me a little bit of Alex Wood. He goes through these stretches where he looks really, really good, but then he comes back down to earth. He's really hard to pick up. He's hard to, for opposing hitters to pick up his delivery. If he's throwing 93 to 95 instead of 90 to 92, all of a sudden that plays up even more. And so I do think, yeah, there's definitely something going on with Sean Manaea that makes him worth buying if he can keep this up. I'll also add a pitcher that, is not a buy low, but, right now is more of a buy high, but Kenta Maeda. I think he's back. The splitter and slider, which are the two signature pitches for him, they've been working really well lately. I know his last 6 starts, I think, have been really, really good ERA. I want to say under 2.5 in that stretch. He had one blow up start, and it's since that stretch. I don't know the exact stats. I was looking them up recently, but he's another pitcher that I would definitely be looking to buy if I get the opportunity.
Yeah, it just looks like Kenta Maeda is finally healthy, and it's his last 5 starts the entire month of July, 2.15 ERA, 11 K per 9, under 2 walks per 9. That's a big part of this too. Earlier in the season, Maeda was walking a lot. You saw the control kind of erratic for him, which we've never really seen from Kenta Maeda. And he was giving up a lot more hard contact. And during this 5-star stretch, an 85.3 mile per hour average exit velocity, which is fantastic. I will point out, 3 of those starts against the Tigers, one of them against the Royals. So you keep that in mind, but I do think Kenta Maeda is back compared to what he was doing earlier in the season, for sure. Players to sell, Chris, one hitter, one pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about him earlier, but Starling Marte, if I'm in a roto league especially, I think the effect might be muted in a points league because we're going to see more runs in RBI. But if I'm in a roto league, because steals are so scarce, I think trying to sell him right now, because I do think he's going to run less, if you can get a huge return, if somebody values him like a top 10 outfielder and you're okay with steals, I do think trying to sell him makes sense because I do think he'll be less valuable after this trade. If I can move him for, like an Aaron Judge, I would do that.
Would you trade him straight up for Whit Merrifield?
Yeah, I would rather have Whit Merrifield than Starling Marte, but that's been true all season.
I will just say, you guys give me stuff for Yankees, but Starling Marte just leaves the Marlins. Now you just got to trade him away from your fantasy team. I mean, come on, Chris.
Oh, yeah, no, that's 100%. I mean, there's no question about it.
Pitcher?
The Marlins turn every hitter into magic.
A pitcher to sell?
I know you don't agree, but Jameson Taillon. I just don't buy what he's doing lately. I don't think there's much there. I know he is coming, not coming back. He's back from the injury, but he's starting to find himself or maybe getting more comfortable. Yeah, I don't really buy it. He had the 9 strikeout start on July 6th. Since then, 11 strikeouts, 7 walks, and 18 and a third innings pitched. I don't think he's got the juice. I don't see it there. The 9 strikeouts really stand out like a sore thumb. You know, no matter how far back you go, you really can't get to a point where he's got even an average strikeout rate. So I don't think Jameson Taillon's going to be able to stay, you know, as even an average pitcher moving forward.
No, I'm fine with that.
Really hating hard on the Yankees here.
No, I'm actually fine with that one because during this 4-start stretch, he's got a 1.42 ERA. His xFIP is 5.32, and that's because he's allowing over 50% fly balls, and he pitches in Yankee Stadium. And he's not getting those swings and misses. His swinging strike rate is right around 11%. That's about league average, just 7.1 K per nine. I think Taillon is fine as a streaming starting pitcher. He's just inside my top 70, but I don't know that he's going to be much better than that unless he starts to get a few more ground balls here.
I swear I didn't pick 2 Yankees on purpose.
Yeah. How dare you, Chris? All right. We have about 10 minutes left. Let's try and run through as much of this stuff as we possibly can. What do we do with these starting pitchers? Madison Bumgarner at the Rangers on Wednesday. 7 innings, 2 runs, 4 strikeouts. He's 57% rostered, and it looks like he's in line for 2 starts next week up against the Giants at the Padres. Any interest?
Not the best matchups.
No.
It's not. But he's a streamer. He's a fine 2-start option. I would imagine he'll be ranked pretty highly in Scott's 2-star pitchers list.
Jordan Lyles is the pitcher who opposed Madison Bumgarner in the start. 7 innings, 2 runs, 6 strikeouts. He had 15 swinging strikes on 98 pitches. By the way, I think this game is a perfect example of stream your pitchers against the Diamondbacks and the Rangers moving forward, especially no Joey Gallo. I mean, those two are just prime matchups. Anyway, Jordan Lyles, 10% rostered, up against the Angels and at the Oakland A's next week. Anything?
2-star streamer only in points leagues. He is actually going deep into games lately. Over his last 6 outings, he's gone at least 6 innings in 5 of them. He's only, or actually now 7 because he went 7 in this one. He's gone at least 6 innings in 6 of his last 7. He's gone at least 7 in 3 of that stretch. One of them wasn't even a start. He actually pitched 6 innings out of relief. So, you know, in a points league, because of that volume, I think you can get away with using him in a 2-start week. But Roto, I still think the most likely outcome is he's going to be a 4 or 5 ERA guy at you know, at best rest of season.
I probably should have talked about Tanner Houck sooner than 55 minutes into the podcast, but he went up against the Blue Jays on Wednesday. 4 innings, 1 run, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts, 14 swinging strikes on only 75 pitches against a really, really good Blue Jays lineup. 33% called strike plus swinging strike percentage there.
Caught strike percentage.
Got that right for you, Chris. Someone pointed out via email that you can swing at a strike and it might not be caught. So
it's caught eventually.
Tanner Houck is 41% rostered in 3 games, 2 starts since being recalled, 11.2 innings, 1 run, 18 strikeouts. There might be something here.
Yeah, there's definitely something there. I mean, he's appeared in, he's thrown what, 39 and a third innings in his major league career, and he's got some quick math, 52 strikeouts. Pretty good. Only more quick math, 14 walks in those 39 innings. That's actually quite impressive. I just think the problem is he's always going to be a short spurts kind of guy because he really is just a 2-pitch pitcher. And it's not like he's, you know, like a Denelson Lamet type where he's throwing the slider 50% of the time. It's been more like 60-40. So I think he's probably always going to have trouble pitching deep into games. They're probably always going to have a pretty tight leash on him in that third time through the order. But, you know, there's value in that kind of guy if he can keep racking up big strikeout numbers like he has. You know, 15 and 9 innings over the last 2 starts.
Chris Bubich, 6 innings, 2 runs, 3 strikeouts against the White Sox. He's 8% rostered. That's 3 straight starts for Bubich of at least 6 innings and 2 earned runs or less. And it looks like he's in line for 2 starts next week at the White Sox at the Cardinals. I kind of like Bubich. He's got 3 pitches. I don't know that any of them are great, but I like what I've seen this through this three start stretch. I like him more than Lyles and Madbum.
I guess because he's young. That's kind of the only thing I really think he has going for him. You know, you look at the, you know, the XERA is 5.81 right now, which is like when you've got a 4.72 ERA and your 4.58 ERA and your XERA is a run worse. That's a pretty bad sign. I do remember, you know, when he got called up being pretty interested in him, but he just doesn't seem to have good stuff. Like the secondary pitches don't get many swinging strikes. The fastball is well below average in speed and spin rate. And so I don't see how he gets it done, especially because he's got pretty mediocre control. So I would like to be interested in him, but I can't get there.
Last three names here. Adrian Hauser, 5 shutout against the Pirates. He has a 3.69 ERA, gets a ton of ground balls. His velocity was actually up about 2 miles per hour on the fastball in that start. Looks like he's in line for 2 starts next week against the Pirates, against the Giants. 15-team roto. Maybe you stream him there. Nestor Cortez. The ERA is now down to 1.93, 0.95 whip with the Yankees. I don't actually think he's all that good, but the underlying numbers really support Nestor Cortez. He's 3% rostered. He has SPARP eligibility. AL only, the deepest of leagues. And then Michael Wacha, in the month of July, he's made 4 starts, 3.60 ERA, 1.05 whip, 12% rostered. And the matchups next week, if this actually works out, because there's always stuff changing with matchups, but Mariners and at the Orioles for Wacha, it's pretty good.
Yeah, again, the underlying numbers are pretty gross.
Pretty gross.
For Michael Wacha, 6.08 xERA. And while that is, that I guess that was coming into today, it's probably gone down a little bit. He has, the last 4 seasons, his best xERA is the 4.61 he put up last season.
Yikes.
That's not great. It's certainly not what you want to see. And, you know, he went against the Yankees today. I think, you know, especially moving forward, the Yankees are going to kind of like, they're not going to be a good matchup for pitchers. They're going to be like the ultimate boom or bust matchup, though.
Sure.
Because a third of their hitters are Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, and Joey Gallo.
Yeah.
That's, you're either going to get crushed or you're going to get 10 strikeouts, and you might do both.
As a team, the Yankees had a 24.4% strikeout rate this season. That's the 10th highest in baseball. That's without Joey Gallo on their team. So,
and with, you know, Judge and Stanton missing some time.
Just keep that in mind. real quickly, where do we add these hitters, if anywhere? So I'll bring up a name. You just tell me what type of format, what size league. Cesar Hernandez went 2-for-3 with his 18th home run. His last 7 games, he's batting .346 with 3 homers, 61% rostered.
I saw his homer today was a wall scraper. I wanted to see what percentage of his home runs have been just barely enough to leave. And fewer than I thought, actually. His ex home run is 15.4. It's actually better than I would have expected. I still think like his problem has always been he's a little bit more of a points league guy, but points is the shallower format. But he's worth starting in a 12-team league as a middle infielder.
AJ Pollock, yeah. He went 3-for-4 with an RBI, a run scored, and his 4th stolen base. The dude is hot right now, 57% rostered.
Any league where you start more than 3 outfielders, I think.
Miles Straw went 2-for-5 with 2 steals. He's now up to 17 steals on the season. He's 38% rostered.
Just roto or categories leagues where you need speed. No value outside of that.
Yeah, he's really a one-trick pony. 262 batting average. It doesn't hurt you. It doesn't help you.
He's going to steal 25 bases and hit .265 this season. Before the season, we definitely would have taken that.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess even in 3 outfielder leagues, categories, if you really need speed, Miles Straw, that's a name for you. Dalton Varsho, 10 hits, 4 homers over his last 7 games. He has started in center field in 2 of the last 3 games, 43% rostered. I'm going to marry these together. Max Stassi hit his 9th home run of the season on Wednesday. He's 51% rostered. Which one would you rather have, Chris? Varsho, Stassi?
I want it to be Varsho. I really, really badly want it to be Varsho because the potential to get a power speed guy at catcher is so hard to pass up. What's his playing time look like when Ketel Marte gets back? Which should be next week, right?
It could be. He recently started his
rehab assignment on Monday.
Yes.
So, I mean, obviously the way this season has gone, there's no guarantee Ketel Marte stays back when he's back. But yeah, I think that's the concern. It's just what's the playing time look like. But I think it would still be Varsho over Stassi.
Oh, come on. Stassi's the man. He's inside my top 10 catchers. I'll take Stassi. I like both of these guys, though. I think Varsho is pushing that top 12 range where move him ahead of James McCann and Sean Murphy and maybe even Omar Narvaez at this point. Varsho is very interesting. And now starting in center field definitely helps give you volume from the catcher position. Mm-hmm. Carson Kelly is a name that's going to return at some point, too. But with Eduardo Escobar being traded, you could get Ketel Marte back at second base if they want to go that route. As long as Varsho's playing well, I think they're going to leave him in center field. So I like both of these guys.
If he keeps hitting like this, he's going to force the point either way.
All right, the call to the pen, some bullpen updates for the Blue Jays. Jordan Romano got his 8th save in game 1 of the doubleheader. Then Matt Barnes got his 23rd save in game 2. For the Mets, Edwin Diaz got his 23rd save. For the Yankees, Aroldis Chapman has looked very good the past couple of outings. 20th save for him. For the Diamondbacks, Joaquin Soria was used in the 8th inning. Tyler Clippard picked up his first save of the season, his first save in 3 years. How about that? The White Sox, Liam Hendricks gave up a solo home run to Salvador Perez. He took his 5th blown save of the season. And I saw that the Angels only won by
Raisel Iglesias. I think he got a win.
Yes,
he did. I think he pitched the top of the 9th or bottom of the 9th in a tie game and then got the win.
Well, they were home, so he pitched the top. It looks like he gave up some. No, he didn't. So he came in the 8th in a jam. He actually
blew the save.
Yeah.
And then got the win. Okay, there you go.
One of those wins. So it really wasn't a good one. By the way, Shohei Ohtani hit his 37th home run. It's very late in the podcast, but still worth mentioning. Walker Buehler has now gone 6-plus innings in 20 of 21 starts this season. So just give it up to the guy. Amazing. Thursday, to stream or not to stream, Kyle Freeland at the Padres, Alex Cobb versus the A's, Chad Kuhl versus the Brewers, Luis Patino versus the Yankees, and Drew Smyly at the Mets. It's very bad.
Alex Cobb is the only one I would even consider.
Let's see if anyone else has.
He might not make that start, though, because it's entirely possible he gets traded.
That is true. As of now, he's on the schedule and he's on the Angels. So we'll see what happens. I'm trying to see if has anyone else popped up here? Nope, there is nobody. It's a very bad day of streamers for Thursday. How about Friday? Let's see what we got. I didn't write these down beforehand, so we're doing it on the fly. We'll do it live. Ryan Weathers is at home against the Rockies. Not bad.
Okay, maybe.
Patrick Sandoval is still under 70% rostered. You should stream him and then keep him on your team.
He's not a streamer, but yeah.
Wade LeBlanc.
Like Tuukka Toussaint. Bad. Also, like you can add Tuukka Toussaint. I don't know if I want to start him against the Brewers right now.
That's true. They are hot. All right.
And I assume Logan Gilbert is out of streaming roster rate, but if he's there,
Colby Allard against the Mariners? Huh, Chris?
Nah.
Who's facing the Pirates? Oh, Aaron Nola. He's going to be in your lineup anyway.
Stream him.
Who's facing the Marlins? Jameson Taillon. He's over 70% rostered.
Start him.
There's not really. Martin Perez at Tampa Bay. They do struggle against lefties quite a bit.
Yeah.
Matt Harvey, the Dark Knight at the Tigers. 2 straight quality starts.
No, thank you.
All right, Ross Stripling, actually, I do like against Kansas City. I know he's under 70% rostered, so we'll give you one.
Not a bad one.
Ross Stripling up against the Kansas City Royals, I believe the first game back in the Rogers Center, so it should be a lot of fun there for the Blue Jays and their fans. We're going to wrap there. For Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye!
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.